We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Has got him and a sack him back inside the 30-yard line. Nick Bosa drops Aaron Rodgers for a 13-yard loss.
Quick pass caught by Kittle. He dives and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate you being here. Have a seat. This episode, of course, is brought to you by Prize Picks. And today we are joined by an incredibly special guest, a dude that has built himself an absolute empire on YouTube/Twitter. You may know the accounts as the SF Niners, but behind that account is Brad Graham, also can be found at @Graham_SFN. How's it going, bro?
Rob, I appreciate that introduction. I hopefully I can live up to that wonderful introduction, but I appreciate you, man, having me on and looking forward to talk some Niners ball.
I know, dude. I had to, it didn't take me long to realize that. Because this is kind of the first time the 49ers have been, in a while at least, have been like the favorite for them to draft is far and away offensive line. And that, of course, means they're not going to do it. But
100%.
But when offensive line is at the forefront, I am in the back of the room, like with a notepad, just writing shit down. Because I've never coached offensive line. I didn't play offensive line. And, you know, I can basically just look at the tape and be like, yeah, he can stand in front of that guy pretty well. You know, like it's not my forte. And at the forefront of kind of just what I was able to discern was Brad Graham, that knows his offensive lineman. But offensive line is like in your DNA, is it not?
It is. I was lucky enough to play offensive line into college. I dabbled with center, guard. I definitely didn't have the physique for a tackle. You would consider me a undersized center, most likely 6'3". There were times when I was starting in college around 250 pounds. So definitely relied on first step, quickness, speed, get off, technique. And it's pretty funny. I forget who I was listening to talk, but they were mentioning about how guys who have played before typically are drawn to prospects that mirror their skill sets. And I'm like, that's 100% true. Like, I'm always looking for the hybrid kind of athletic, not huge offensive linemen, but more of athlete kind of types, because that's what I would have considered myself as a player back then. I was like, you know what? That person's spot on, because that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a specific archetype, but that doesn't mean the 49ers are looking for that specific archetype. Right. So it's the balance of what I like, what I think the 49ers like, and then bringing those things together. And I would say my playing days, even though I don't have some glorified, wonderful background playing, I definitely use it every single day to evaluate and scout all the prospects that I watch.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned because I played receiver, and it's funny that you mentioned our prototypes mirroring kind of the way we played. Cause one of my favorite receivers of all time is Anquan Boldin, because he was slow as hell. He had great hands and he ran great routes. And me, I was slow as hell, but I still just so firmly believe that I don't care how fast you are. If you run a good enough route, you will not be able to cover me, at least not in the moment where I need the ball, you know? And that I used to attach myself and on to Anquan Boldin so firmly. Cause I was like, this dude probably towards the end of his career, when he was at with the 49ers, he probably ran a 5 second 40, like, realistically, he was like a 4.8 coming out of college, you know? So, you know, at the end of his career, I was just like, this is how I win, you know, like,
this is it. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, you look at Keenan Allen coming out, he ran a 4.71. People were knocking him for his 40 time. And again, you said, like how you said it there at the end too, this is how I win. That's how I scout. Like, right. I know a lot of people will pull up the measurables and be like, ah, well, look at this trait. Look at that trait. It doesn't quite fit the norm of the measurables. But to be honest, I'm a big fan of finding the outliers to the rule, I guess, is figuring out
the Brock Purdy's.
At 100%, figuring out how guys win and can that translate to the NFL? Because listen, if you have a slow 40, if you aren't like ultimately very strong, but you're technically sound, you can find ways to beat quote unquote better talent, bigger, stronger, faster, if you're smarter and you play with quality technique. So that's what I'm always looking for. It's always a balance, right? Because we get into the draft and you get the behemoths, right? The 6'8", 320 pound offensive lineman. You're like, people are salivating because they ran 5 flat, but do they move well laterally? What's their first step look like? Do they keep their pad level low? And I think that there's all kinds of context that goes into the evaluation process where people get fixated on the measurable and they forget about, can they just win? Can they play ball? And can that translate?
And you know what's funny too, is you just said that is just a couple pods ago when we were talking about, forgot his first name. Is it Amarius Mims? Is that how you say his name?
Basically who I was talking about when I was.
It's almost gotten to the point where if somebody's, and I was talking about Lance Zierlein's little scouting reports that you can find on NFL.com, but it's if someone's first mention of the prospect or the first thing they say about that prospect is about their measurables, it's almost like a red flag to me. Like I would be willing to bet, and I am not a betting man, except for on Prize Picks, where I would be willing to bet that the dudes that are, you know, the prospect or the measurable dudes, I would be willing to bet that the guys who are lacking in those measurables succeed more than the guys with all the measurables. Because like you said, it requires, you know, I heard you say earlier with Larry Kruger, the how much dog does he have in him? And the guys that are used to playing without the measurables are going to have to find ways to win that are, I want to say, like, require more of everything else. You know what I mean? Like, they have to compensate for the fact that their arms aren't 85 inches long. But to me, if you're going to talk about an offensive lineman prospect and the first thing you mention is, well, he's not that experienced, and he didn't necessarily show great stuff on tape, but his measurables are through the roof. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm out, because I just want to see how the guy plays football. I don't know. It's right. Almost, are they overcomplicating it at this point? Like, how does the guy play football? Just tell me that.
You're 100% right. And it's just like Amarius Mims is like the perfect example of that. And to your point, what did he play? 8 games in college, like from a starting perspective, extremely inexperienced, but the measurables, they're rare. The size, all these different types of things, which again, yes, 100%. But one of the things when you look at offensive line is low man wins. And if you're 6'8 and you can't bend at the hips and you have You don't have a quality base. You don't have good feet. You're asking to get just blown over by one of these elite defensive ends with amazing first step get off. That's why, like, for me, my favorite prospect on the offensive line is considered to be one of the most undersized. And, you know, Troy Fautanu out of Washington at 6'4", I mean, he's a unique athlete, but he doesn't get talked about that way because people look at the measurables and they go, he's only 6'4". They see 6'4". They're like, oh, guard. It's just like this interesting way that people have of evaluating that I think I can't blame them for it, to be honest. Like, I get it. I understand it. You look at the trends, you look at the past, but I'm a very type of outlier type person. Like, I'm trying to find what makes these players unique. I'm not trying to fit them into my keyhole. I'm trying to find a new set of keys. I'm trying to find someone who's going to unlock something that maybe I haven't been clued in on. Maybe, you know, my evaluations have, or my rules for evaluations have evolved over the years because you get more information, you hit, you miss, you figure out why you missed, and then you evolve your eval. So for me, with the offensive line, I am not scared of smaller prospects at all. I'm not scared of short arms, and I'm not scared of perceived lack of measurables, because you can find out really quickly that some of these elite measurable guys just suck at football. And then some of the guys who may lack those things, and like you said, they've learned how to play without those their entire lives. So to them, it's nothing. They perfected it. They have workarounds, just like we all have workarounds and things in our lives. And so I think that's, for me, how I personally approach evaluation is I'm not looking for guys to fit my mold. I'm looking for someone to break the mold. And that's ultimately how I try to view the evaluation process.
So a little bit more specific, just we'll touch on it really quickly before we get into the actual dudes. Like, when I'm looking at receivers, the first thing I look at, obviously, I guess I would say it's 50-50 for me, just the way I look at it. The first thing I'm looking at are hands and route running. That's like, to me, that's like you've got like almost 90% of the bar graph right there, you know, like is hands and route running, hands and route running. And then I look at, and I guess I can't say 90%, because with me, and with everybody loves to say it, but do they live it? You know, if you don't block, you don't get the rock. My, like, the receivers I coach, and like, the way I put it to them too is I'm like, dude, think of it this way. Like, no, you're not catching the ball on that route, but you get to hit the guy in the face that has to cover you on the next play. Like, why would you not want him to just be in a little worse shape for when he has to cover you? You know, that's kind of how I break it to the seventh and eighth graders. But so those are the things I look at. Many more things, but I just don't want to go off on that right now. What are some of the things you look at with offensive linemen that you would consider make or break, or maybe not even that, just your most important qualities when you watch offensive linemen?
Feet and base are really the key elements. I have really started to evolve hand usage into that, because what I've noticed since I've studied Trent Williams on tape every year since he's been with the 49ers and how technically advanced he is, I feel like that is starting to seep down to the lower levels, which as an offensive line purist makes me really happy. But for what I'm looking for is, how will you move, right? That's, people are focusing on 40 times, all those different types of things. It's very rare that you're going to find an offensive lineman running 40 yards downfield in a straight line. Although I think it's a great kind of measuring stick to be able to compare these guys. I'm looking, how do you manage your kick step, your vertical set? What do you do when you're getting out on a screen? Or do these guys find their tracks easily? Do they get lost? Do they start aiming and headhunting versus finding their tracks? It all comes down to just like how well their feet are married to kind of the width of their base and how they can functionally move. Because at the NFL level, I mean, you look at all the defensive tackles now, they're they're studs. They're absolute power and speed. The prototypical, like, I'm trying to think of like your old school nose tackles that are just there to plug up gaps. Like, they're becoming more rotational guys, whereas you can get the Aaron Donald type, the strength plus finesse. Those guys are having a ton of success in the NFL because I think of their movement ability. And as an offensive lineman, one of the key elements is being able to mirror, right? You got to mirror the defender, whether he's going upfield, inside, trying to bull rush you. You have to have an answer for all those things. And it all starts with your feet. It all starts with your base and how you bend. So for me, when evaluating offensive line, I really want to see the feet. How well do they move? How quick are they? And how well do they change position?
I'd probably say, and this isn't rocket science, but probably the freakiest athlete on an NFL field, except for Trent Williams. You have to kind of leave him off the scale because he just tips everything to that angle. But the freakiest athlete on the field is like a true outside linebacker. You know, a dude that's like 6'6", 200, a lean to like the Nick Bosa's in the world. Now he plays defensive end, but all you got to do is look at that guy walk around and you know that he is. Humans aren't necessarily supposed to look that way. Like, that's just right. the exception to the rule. Have you seen like an evolution in offensive linemen over time, maybe based on when you played versus now? Are offensive linemen kind of evolving in a way to have to deal with the fact that interior linemen are getting more athletic? Outside linebackers were athletic and they're just getting more athletic. They're running 4.4s like routinely now. You know, is there like a counterbalance from the offensive line? Have things changed in that position group at all?
I feel like this class is kind of representative of the evolution of like offensive line play. And like this class is really going to be an injection of talent that I think is going to help the overall evolution of offensive line play. The biggest challenge, I think, is that all the talent wants to go play defensive tackle or defensive end. And rightfully so. You get to rotate. You don't have to play every snap. And you actually impact the game via tackle for loss, sacks, fumbles, like, and you get paid a lot of money. Whereas if you can put more athletes on the offensive line, I really think that's how you mitigate and kind of counterbalance what these D lines are throwing at you. And that's why Troy Fautanu is my guy in this draft. He is an athlete in every sense of the word. My favorite thing while, you know, getting a chance to listen to him speak at the combine was he's like, I didn't want to play offensive line. You know, I was an athlete. I thought I was going to have the ball in my hand as a football player. And they just saw how big he was. And they're like, no, you got to play offensive line. So he has the mindset of a skill position playing offensive line. And I think when you look at what the defensive line is, and you talked about those prototypical edges and like guys that come to my mind, like Brian Burns, just 250, 6'4", 6'5". Just freaky, freaky explosive. You just have athletes. And I think you have to counterbalance that with athletes. I don't think just putting bigger masses of flesh on the offensive line is the answer to just get in their way. Like, you need guys who can go toe to toe, step for step with all and be able to counter and bait. And that's why I think that the current state of O-line is actually headed in the right direction for kind of the things that we're talking about. And this class, to me, I think has a chance to really help that evolution along.
Yeah, I wasn't that long ago. I don't know. Maybe I can't remember who I was talking about it to, but I was like, what happens if there's like this weird like Marvel, you know, multiverse where like the defensive ends played O-line too, or like there was another universe where Nick Bosa played offensive line.
I have a perfect story for this.
Well, dude, fire away, because this is really the stupid shit I come up with by myself on this podcast. You know, I'm like a multiverse where the offensive lineman looks like the defensive end. So add to my story.
Okay, so as we know, 49ers podcast, Eric Armstead, they had the whole contract situation. He's now a Jaguar, right? Defensive tackle, got paid like $17 million a year. Good job. Good for him. He's gotten a lot of money throughout his time in the NFL playing defensive tackle. When he was coming out of high school, and we were kind of talking about this offline of, you know, all my sports energy is just into the 49ers and building this platform that I have developed throughout this time. Well, before, I was so much of a football nerd that I was scouting incoming prospects into college. And so Eric Armstead was one of those high school kids getting recruited to Cal. Cal was my team. And he was getting recruited as an offensive tackle. He was getting recruited to Oregon as a defensive tackle. I was watching him and breaking down his tape as a high schooler. And I was like, this guy could be one of the best offensive linemen to ever play the game if he plays tackle. He goes to Oregon, plays tackle, but if you think about it, like you watch Eric play, his bull rushes are crazy. When he gets his arms on these guards and starts driving them back, he's so powerful, he's so quick. And if you think about his size of being 6'7", 6'8", but has the feet, has the base, has the bend, has the power, has the ability to have the technical prowess to be a refined offensive line. Dude, I will go to my grave believing that the only offensive lineman who would rival Eric Armstead right now, if he chose to play tackle, is Trent Williams. And I do think there's a world that exists where Eric is the best offensive lineman in the NFL if he chose to play tackle. But he chose to be a defensive tackle. It's worked out great for him. But man, you think of those skill sets, those traits, those abilities at tackle, dude, he would have been next level.
That's a great story. And now I'm just sitting here like wishing I wasn't recording just in this moment so I could just think about it. You know what I mean? Like have some dead air of me thinking about Eric Armstead playing offensive. And even like his counterpart, DeForest Buckner. And like that dude has over 11 inch hands. Like imagine if he was a tackle. And the moment he got his hands on you, it's over. You know, it's like
over.
There's a lot of stuff. You could really see that with a lot of these, now that you mention it, these defensive line and defensive end prospects, there was probably at some point there was a fork in the road where they could have gone that direction and they just didn't. And to your point, what you mentioned earlier, like the injustice is it comes from the expression like, well, if you're an offensive lineman and they're not saying your name, then you're doing your job right. You know, and that shows you why they become defensive ends is because
exactly.
they if they get a sack, if they get a tackle for loss, if they do it, get a run stuff, their name is brought up every single play. Whereas then everybody's out here going, oh, you know, if you're an offensive lineman and they don't say your name, you're good. And it's like, well, damn, no wonder nobody plays that shit. Like
exactly 100. It's one of my biggest pet peeves too. It's like, man, we got to learn how to talk about these guys in a way of omitting them from the game as that being a sign that they did a good job.
Right. I know. And it's sad. That's the way it is, you know,
but I get it. Offensive line is a very challenging position because it's the only position on the field where it's truly five guys working together. You know, how do you properly assess a double team when someone misses their assignment? Like there have been so many times on 49ers Twitter where Mike McGlinchey or Colton McKivitz is getting absolutely cooked when in reality the right guard missed their assignment and it just made them look ultimately bad. But again,
isn't that initially what happened in the Super Bowl? Like people tried to cook Colton McKivitz for
they tried to cook Colton 100%. And
right.
you had Spencer Burford step to the wrong side. He didn't follow his execution. The tackle's thinking his guard's going to be there, and his guard isn't there. So you get a free, lane to the quarterback. And that's a part of the nuance is these guys rely so much, so heavily on each other that it becomes challenging to determine if you, I would say if you haven't played or you haven't studied O-line at a, like a high level, it's hard to understand like sometimes how these guys work in tandem together pretty much all the time.
Did you see that Jim Harbaugh quote where he was talking about the fact that the offensive line is the only position group in football that doesn't need the help or doesn't rely on another position group to do their job? And the fact that they're basically relied on by everybody else to do theirs, you know, that's, someone's out there fighting the good fight.
I saw that quote today, and then I saw another. I don't even know who this coach was for the Chargers, but he basically stated in his opening press conference that the entire like foundation of the team is going to be built through the O-line and how much emphasis that they put on developing the O-line. And I was like, I quote tweeted, and I was like, I think the Chargers might have to be my second team now after listening to this. Like, I would love for Kyle to come out and say that about the offensive line, but I don't know if that's how he feels about it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. One, he's an offensive guy, so you would think you would kind of understand that, like, the nucleus of the offense is the guys in the middle. But what's funny too is for the 49ers to be so defensive line centric, you know, like, for the past, you know, there were 3 years in a row where they, 4 years in a row, essentially, where they drafted a defensive lineman or a defensive end in the first round. But you would think it would be hard to have that philosophy and do such a good job of ignoring the offensive line in a way that I wouldn't say the 49ers have ignored it, but it certainly doesn't get the love that they've given the defensive line. But it's like, in investing in a defensive line, you know what you want to do to an offensive line. So wouldn't you also want an offensive line that can't have that done to it? You know what I mean?
No, 100%. Like, I totally understand the theory and the thought process behind the way they built their defensive line. I don't think that should change.
Not at all.
But to your point, it's like, well, wouldn't you want elite on the other side as well? And,
right. You
know, and again, I catch myself too talking about the 49ers offensive line. I'm like, oh, the 49ers don't value the offensive line. And then you're like, well, they did spend a top 10 pick on McGlinchey, and they did pay Weston Richburg a good contract. He got hurt. Then they brought in Alex Mack, and they traded for Lakin, and then they drafted Aaron Banks in the second, and they traded for so you start going down the list, and you're like, well, that's just objectively not true. They do invest in their offensive line. I think just where we currently are sitting with looking at the status of the offensive line, I think it feels like they don't invest. They have. I just don't think that's the group that we look at and go, well, that's a top five, top eight group in the league, even considering how much success they've had through the air and on the ground with that group. And that's the crazy thing for me to think about is like, how much better could the offense be if they did have a legit top five, top 10 offensive line across the board? It would be interesting to see.
It would. All right. So I'm going to mention some prize picks real quick, and then we come back. We're going to talk 49ers offensive line and the prospects out there that will be able to upgrade it a little bit. So, all right. Y'all know how I feel about prize picks. They're rolling with Striking Gold for 2024. The easiest, most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you. There's no pros. There's no sharks. You pick more or less 2 to 6 players, watch the winnings roll in. Testing my skills on Prize Picks has been awesome. It's been so much fun. You guys know this. I've said it so many times. And one of the things I like best about playing Prize Picks is just how simple it is. It takes 60 seconds to create a lineup. Everything looks cool. It's easy to navigate through. It's such a fun website to use. And I think everybody can relate to me when I say that there's nothing more frustrating than trying to use a website that isn't well built. Prize Picks does not have that problem. Whether it's Major League Baseball, NBA, college basketball, hockey, soccer, whatever your sport is, Prize Picks has a section for it. So what you guys want to do is go to prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD, and they're going to match your first deposit up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD as well. Prize Fix is daily fantasy sports made easy. All right. So just to kind of set the table, I guess, for where the 49ers are, you've got Trent Williams, 1 to 2 years out from retirement, maybe three max, like if he's just trying to show off at that point. You know, you've got Aaron Banks is in the last year of his deal. Jake Brendel's an average, inexpensive veteran starter. You know, and not bad, not great. Whatever you want to say about him would probably be true. John Feliciano is a suitable stopgap. Probably surprised a lot of people last year with how well he played. And then you've got Colton McKivitz is on the team, but he could be upgraded on, you know, and I don't think that extension necessarily means he's the guy for the next 2 years. So that's kind of where, and I felt it was necessary to say that because it's like, everybody's very focused on a right tackle. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I could see them going center. I could see them going guard if he was good enough, you know, like, typically guards aren't considered a first round guy, but if he's good enough, then get him. Like if he's a good player, you just draft him. So to me, I could see the 49ers going anywhere on the offensive line. When you were talking about your journey as an undersized offensive lineman prospect, I was like, okay, so he's this year's Jackson Powers Johnson, you know, who's 6'3" and just an absolute like tank. So, I mean, what do you think, man? What's your read on the 49ers offensive line? Do you feel like I thought I heard you say earlier that you're not even sure they're going to go offensive line in the first round? Nobody is, but you can have your convictions one way or the other. What's your read on this team and what do they need?
My read on this team is that I don't know, which is, you know, I'm supposed to come on here, bang the table, tell you everything that I think they're going to do, right? But
you be you, Brad. Just be you.
So the problem with me is that I attack all of this from a very nuanced perspective, trying to, and you know, there's so many things that go into these decisions. And I think of it like this, trying to put myself inside that building. I do think they believe their perception is, we have the same offensive line that had us as one of the top-ranked offenses in the league last year and had us in the overtime of the Super Bowl. And I know a lot of people, we already talked about the play that I think has kind of accelerated everyone's thoughts into fixing the right side of the offensive line. I think the 49ers look at the value that they have on that offensive line. I think people were really surprised that they got so many defensive tackles, because prior to free agency, I was talking about how defensive tackle was a huge need, and I got a lot of pushback from fans on that, and it's no, offensive line, it's offensive line.
I think it's still a huge need.
I agree, and I even had people going as far as saying it's not a need at all. It's offensive line that's the need. And I'm just trying to look at this like objectively. The 49ers are bringing back a Super Bowl caliber offensive line. As hard as that may be to hear and process, it's an objective fact. And so I think that's part of how they're viewing the roster construction, is that they extended Colton McKivitz to give him a buffer window of like, listen, we might bring in someone in here to compete with you, but we appreciate what you did last year, regardless of the perceived ability of what he did. We're going to give you an opportunity to win that job in training camp this year. Feliciano, he's going to have an opportunity to win that job at right tackle. And Brendel, I thought he started off the season really hot, and then he took a dive and definitely felt like there was some regression there. And then even with Aaron Banks, he was hurt a lot of the year, and I don't think he played consistently enough. So I think they look at it from the sense of, we have a baseline starting unit. We feel comfortable enough to go into the season with this unit because they did it last year. Right. So when I'm looking at what do the 49ers need, I feel like they need an impact player at 31. And will that be an offensive lineman? Will that be a Jordan Morgan or a Kingsley Suamataia who's going to come in and, you know, beat out Colton McKivitz in just six padded training camp practices. You hope that would be the case, but I also think there's a world that exists where that's not a guarantee either. So what you really have to weigh out, I think, with this first pick at 31 is who's going to be an impact the most, because I can find center guards second through fifth every year like clockwork where we will find some starters on the interior of the offensive line. If you opt to punt from tackle at 31, you're going more the developmental route of a guy who could show up and surprise you, but you're not counting on it. So I think it becomes a balance of really what do the 49ers prioritize? Do they prioritize taking a guy at 31 who could theoretically be on the bench all year because he doesn't beat out a Colton or a Feliciano or a Brendel? Or do they go in a different spot? Do they go defensive tackle? Do they go cornerback? So I think there's a large range of outcomes that could happen. But I, even as me being a huge offensive line guy, I'm not sold on that it's a guarantee that they're going tackle at 31, even though that's what everyone wants. Everyone agrees that that's where they need to go and upgrade. I just don't fully buy into it's a 100% lock that the 49ers are going OT at 31 or offensive line for in general at 31.
I think the biggest problem that the 49ers have is I think if they were at 21, I think that you could probably almost guarantee they would go offensive line because the level of tackle or wherever they are is, you know, you're between 21 and 31, five offensive linemen could come off the board.
Yes.
You know, there's like 10 first round graded tackles, depending on who you are, offensive linemen, excuse me. There's like 10 first round graded offensive linemen, depending on where you're asked. And the 49ers pick at 31. And offensive line is the second most premier position. If you remove quarterback, you've got guys that rush the passer and guys that protect the passer. So the 49ers don't really have the luxury of just sitting there assuming that a starting caliber plug and play right now, offensive tackle or guard or center for that matter, is going to fall to them. So to your point, I think that this conversation could be a little bit more, not entirely black and white, because it's still the 49ers and they just do what stuff that nobody predicts every now and then.
Yep.
But it would be a lot easier if they were picking a lot higher. But there's plenty of mock drafts that you can find where every, to your point, tackle that would step right in, where the assumption would be going into training camp that Colton McKivitz was either going to move over or hit the bench because the tackle that they drafted was so good. There's a good chance that they're not even going to get that opportunity. But that's when the other positions come in, because if every one of those tackles and guards and centers have been drafted, you're probably looking at a really good corner, a really good defensive lineman. I mean, you can get spicy and mention some of the other positions too, but everything has a, you know, an equal and opposite reaction. So if the 49ers are short on tackles, there's a good chance that, you know, there could be just a stud sitting there that the team is like, I don't necessarily think we can turn this guy down. You know, it'll be at a position that nobody expects. You know, like what if Byron Murphy is sitting there at 31? Like, it depends on how you feel about him, but the team could easily, and that's briefly touching on your point. When I look at the defensive line, I see, okay. I don't see anything closely resembling what this team has trotted out over the past 5 or 6 years. So it's like, I struggle to think that the philosophical makeup of this team since John and Kyle have taken over has just gone out the window and they're okay with this okay defensive line. You know, so to your point in talking about the defensive line needs, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they went that route, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny too, on that note, just one more thing, it wasn't more than a week ago that I realized Chop Robinson and Demaryius Robinson were two different people. I thought it was Demaryius Chop Robinson. Like he had a nickname.
Yeah, like they were. It was just being categorized. Yeah,
and people were just depending on. And then I finally looked it up.
Like,
I was
wait, he didn't play at Mizzou.
No, I'm like, there's two different schools here. What's going on? And so, anyways, so.
I think to like your point that you're making, it's like the process that you have to make at 31. Like let's drill into a little bit like prospect heavy a little bit. Like the thought process right now is that Jordan Morgan out of Arizona and Kingsley Suamataia are going to be kind of the top tackle prospects that are still hanging around 31. And the reason why a defensive tackle, I think, could absolutely be in play if those two guys are on the board is like Jordan Morgan has only played left tackle. So you have to hope he transitions to right tackle and it's seamless. I mean, I can give the example of Penei Sewell, who is a right tackle, drafted to be a left tackle, and Detroit tried him at left tackle. And they had to kick him back to right tackle because that's just where he naturally fit best.
To interrupt you real quick, because of the knowledge that you got, I've always kind of, in my inexperience, laughed when people just are like, oh, you know, they'll just move him to right tackle or move him to the other side. I'm like, wait, isn't that like asking somebody to all of a sudden drive on the other side of the road? Like, it doesn't, is that way harder than people act like it is?
It's really hard. And if you've never done it before, it's exceptionally harder. So like, that's why for me, you know, when looking at Jordan Morgan and seeing he's been only a left tackle, well, the hope is that he would make that transition to right and it would be seamless, but there's no guarantee because he doesn't have a track record of playing on the right tackle. I even asked him, I was like, how would you feel about playing on the right side? He's like, well, I've been training pretty much all at left tackle this summer. I do a couple things on the right side, but I'm predominantly training. He is in his head. He's a left tackle. So that's one of the things you have to consider because there's no, like, everything's mirrored. Everything's backwards. Everything, it's just an uncomfortable place to be if you don't have that experience shifting from left to right. Whereas
mention like the muscles in your body. Like,
absolutely. The muscle memory. It's right. Backwards. Everything that you've learned is in reverse and you got to switch your stance. Your reverse step, your reverse foot is now your kick step foot. And it just changes everything. But then on the flip side of that, you look at Kingsley Suamataia, where he had started his whole junior year at right tackle and then started his whole senior year, or his final year, I should say, at left tackle. So he has two seasons of playing right and left. So you actually have a guy who can functionally change on a drop, like literally from one snap to another. You could take him from left and put him on right and you wouldn't be concerned about it. But he is raw in the technical aspect. Freak athlete, has all the physical tools, but he's raw from a bit of a technical side of it. So it's like that's what you're weighing against. You're weighing, do we take a potential project at 31 who might not play? Or is there a defensive tackle where there is a glaring hole? And do we try to take someone at a great value at 31? Right, for an interior guy and go there. So that's why, like, I'm definitely open to the 49ers drafting an interior defensive tackle at pick 31. And I won't be surprised if that's what they do. And then they kick offensive line down. And hey, you know, in the year that I wanted the 49ers to take Zach Tom, they ended up taking, Spencer Burford. But if you look at what Zach Tom has done in the NFL with the Packers as a fourth round draft pick, he's been absolutely phenomenal as a starter at tackle. So it can happen. Guys like Abe Lucas, you can find these guys later. It's just, again, your, I guess percentage or your cushion of hitting starts to diminish the further and further. And to your point, if they were in the 20s, oh, they would feel much comfortable about the offensive lineman that they would be getting there. Or if they could even trade up and maybe get a Fuwaga or a Futano or a Latham and they could snatch one of them, they would feel much more confident in him being plug and play, ready to go day one. Whereas if you stay at 31, I think it just, there's a lot of options to consider.
It wouldn't surprise me though, if the 49ers, they love moving around the draft board. They love moving up. They love moving back. It wouldn't surprise me at all though. If they've got a few fourth round picks, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to package like a, maybe like a future second or a future third and a fourth and just jump up, I don't know, maybe five or six spots to snag what they believe is that last, you know, plug and play guy. And
yeah.
The other, on the flip side of the coin, when there's so many offensive tackles that are considered starting caliber, the odds that one slips a little bit is also pretty good. You know, I would say it's 50-50. They could all get snatched up like that mm-hmm. because it's a tackle. Why would you, you know, if you're going to draft a player in the first round, it should be an offensive tackle. But at the same time, maybe one of them slips. Do you have like, so I know you got your guy out of Washington that you could, but when I talked about him last podcast on like the players that are being paired with the 49ers, I found one mock draft with him going to the 49ers. And I just said fat chance and moved on. Like, because he is just,
they would have to move into the top 15. And that seems like a stretch.
That would be a future first type of move. And I don't really think they're not really in a position to make those types of moves anymore. Like once you're butted up against the salary cap, you can't deal future first because those are the inexpensive impact players you need in order to sustain a roster. So absolutely. What are some of the offensive line prospects? You've talked a little bit about them, I guess. So since you've already talked about them, name me a few offensive line prospects that you expect that could be in play for the 49ers and name me one or two that you just hope they don't draft. There's always those
for sure. I know he's super popular and we kind of talked about him already. Mims is kind of a popular candidate. I'm not in love with that prospect at all. And again, that screams project to me. So I would actually stay away from Mims. I've watched some of his tape. He looks very lumbering on film. And again, you know, whether it's my own personal bias of offensive linemen. And again, the 49ers do still run outside zone and you got to be able to move. You got to be able to get out in space. You got to be able to get these linebackers that are effectively safeties. They're all converted safeties now. And then you have to go actually get the safeties. You have to be able to move. He kind of makes me nervous. So out of the first round guys, I would probably be out on Mims right now. But if the 49ers were going to stay, we talked about Morgan. We talked about Kingsley. If they do want to go interior, I like Graham Barton. You mentioned Jackson Powers Johnson. Dude is just like, I was joking at the combine to one of my guys. You look at him, he just doesn't have a neck. It's just like ears, shoulders. And then he just lowers his shoulders and the guy and they go flying. He really has a ton of power. But I also like Graham Barton for the sense of very technical, very quick footed. Again, kind of fits that mold of athlete that I'm looking for the interior. So there are definitely a couple guys. And if you want to kick the can a little bit, maybe into the second round offensive tackle, you could look at Patrick Paul out of Houston. He's 6'8", 331 pounds. He does struggle with similar things as Mims, but he has way more experience, and he does showcase a little bit better as a pass blocker. He does need to improve a little bit in his run game, but you really see the athleticism mirrored with his frame really showcase as he can have some success at the NFL. as an offensive tackle, but there's interior offensive linemen, there's centers. There's a lot of guys, Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State, I really like. Trevor Keegan out of Michigan, who could play left guard, I really like as well. Brandon Coleman, you can push probably into the fourth, fifth round range. Out of TCU is someone who kind of stands out to me that fits the athletic profile and has showed some really positive things, not only on tape, but at the Senior Bowl against some pretty quality talent. So there are a lot of offensive linemen in this class. I think it depends on where you want to put your investment, whether first round, second round, third round, or fourth. But I really do believe you can find a starting interior offensive lineman in this class in the fourth round.
So are you kind of like of the opinion that the tackles should be taken early and you should probably kick the centers and guard can down the road a little bit, unless it's kind of one of those generational offensive line prospects, I guess you could say?
Right. Like when I look at Graham Barton, I don't see that guy coming around as a center all too often in regards to experience, his ability to play left tackle, and then kicking that onto the interior and the way he moves and the way he anchors. He's an interesting prospect for me in the first round. I could see Powers going. But yeah, outside of that, like if you're looking for interior offensive line, and this is also, again, it's my own personal bias and I think just confidence in my ability to scout offensive line, is that every year I can find you a starter in rounds 2 through 5, especially on the interior. It gets really challenging to find the tackles in the later rounds. It does happen. But yeah, for me, I can definitely find you some starting caliber centers and guards in the later rounds. So that's typically how I try to like build out my mocks and stuff like that.
Isn't Jordan Mailata, isn't he like a seventh rounder or an undrafted free agent? Or
I think it was seventh rounder, former rugby player.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right. Man, what a story.
Oh yeah.
He's on like great. His second or third contract now, isn't he? Like he's just
I'm a big
pretty
fan
big
of
deal.
Mailata. He's a cool dude too. He chirped me at Radio Row. I asked him if I could interview him about Trent Williams, and he's like, "Oh, Trent Williams, you know, the system left tackle, kind of like Brock Purdy." And I was like, "Oh, I see what you did there. I see what you did there, Jordan." But no, he's a cool dude. I think he's deserving of what he got.
All right, so I mean, where are you at before we leave offensive line? If you had to apply a percentage, how sure are you that they go offensive line? Like what are the chances they go O-line?
In the first round or overall?
In the first round. We'll stick to that for now just because that's what we've been talking. And it's not like you're making a prediction, but in your heart of hearts, what do you, in Graham's heart, what do you feel? Like, it doesn't even have to be offensive line. What do you think they're going to do?
I would say 65% offensive line.
Okay. So, I'd probably say that's about where I'm at too.
Because I really do think that someone could fall and of a position, whether it's outside corner, maybe even a nickel corner, or an interior defensive tackle, or if one of these, like if somehow, we talked about the Robinsons. If Chop Robinson is somehow there at 31, that's a very intriguing guy to take a shot on just based on his physical like traits that he shows on tape, his speed, his length, the way he can bend around the corner. If he's there, like, I think their offensive line that they currently have, I think they are thinking of it like, we don't need offensive line. I think they need offensive line for the future because I think Aaron Banks is a question mark. Brendel's a question mark. Basically, the entire offensive line is a question mark 2-3 years out.
Right.
Let me go that route. So they need offensive line, but they also need to win now, right? So I think winning now is the most important. And then building out long-term sustainability at O-line is second. So that's the challenge. What contributes to winning now? A plug and play starting defensive tackle to replace Eric Armstead, or a guy who could beat out Colton McKivitz? I think that's just kind of where the way that I'm looking at it.
I think too, and that just makes me want to like fight myself even more. Like here I am, I'm like, oh, I'm 65%. They're going to go aligned. And then you think about it the way you just put it, and a team that should have won the Super Bowl, like right. They should have way more than their first loss to the Chiefs. This loss felt like congratulations. Like you really screwed this up. When you think of Christian McCaffrey fumbling and penalties on Trent Williams and a punt that just barely touches a dude's ankle, you know, there, this team is probably so incensed in that building that it was in their hands and they let it go. So with that, if you're putting yourself in that mindset, that the majority of people in that building are probably obsessed with winning it this year. I don't really buy into the idea that their window closes after this year. They can maneuver and they can find ways to stay good. I'm not worried about that. But when you think of a team that's probably just salivating, that couldn't give a damn about the regular season, like they are thinking about the playoffs now. Now, obviously that could be a folly in and of itself. But so to your point, now that I've dragged that on for 2 minutes, what moves the needle for them right now? You know what I mean? And that's the point you're making is an offensive tackle that just a rookie that might barely be better than Colton McKivitz right now. Now he could be a lot better than Colton McKivitz in 2 to 3 years, but right now, because again, this is a team obsessed with winning the Super Bowl. I mean, even Brandon Ayuk was on that nightcap show and he was like, I don't give a damn about your rankings. Tell me how many championships you have. Tell me how many NFC championships you have. You can tell even he is obsessed with, he doesn't care about where you put him. So to your point, I think that if you want to think about other positions, think about that mindset and the fact that this team would probably get better immediately with shit. You could even throw a linebacker in there, like this stud linebacker or a stud defensive lineman or what they believe is a shutdown corner opposite Ward or a nickel that's going to give them some type of attitude like Trent McDuffie, you know, or just... There now you can really convince yourself that they could go other directions with that pick because it has much more of an immediate impact. And is that long-term team building savvy? Maybe not, especially when you think about how important an offensive line is. But for a team, again, that is obsessed with winning the Super Bowl and knows that they just let one go, I could definitely see them thinking about everything but offensive line. They're like, hey, we got the same guys we had. What else do we need? You know, like,
and then you heard Kyle Shanahan talk at the owners meeting where he's like, oh, I love our offensive line. Our offensive line did great. And the fans are like, what did he say? He said our offensive line's good. What's wrong with it? So it's like there's two school of thoughts, right? It's the fan perception, which I would imagine there might even be some listeners being like, what is this guy talking about? No offensive line in the first. But it's like we really have to put ourselves in their shoes, how they view this and how they think they're going to find contributors. Because when we look at the last two drafts, it's really slim pickings of like guys who are actually contributing at a high, high level. Like you can make the argument that the 49ers' best draft pick last year was the kicker, Jake Moody. Right. And what he was able to contribute.
I'm scheduling you for an episode like next week. And we're just going to talk about that the whole time.
But that like that's kind of the point. Right. It's like, yes, Jair Brown contributed, but you're trying to find plug and play guys early. And if there's questions about plug and play ability as an offensive line early, that could be enough to tip the scales to plug and play defensive tackle or cornerback. So I'm not saying that they're not going to, because there are prospects that I think are going to be there that will be quality pros and could absolutely turn into big time players for the 49ers. But I think again, the pressure of win now changes that just a little bit of, we need guys to play early and play often. And who will that be? And who will contribute to a Super Bowl win? Because I think that's the only thing they care about in the short term.
Right. And if you, and I know that me and Brad can see each other on our camera. And every time he walked through that sentence, you could see the camera shake a little bit because he was hitting his hand against the table, shaking the camera. So I
literally
can see,
pounding the table.
I can see your 65% dropping to like 50, like in front of my eyes. You know what I mean? Like all that 49ers gear behind you and thinking about the Super Bowl, you're like, yeah, maybe that position can wait. But it, I mean, we just spent an entire episode talking about offensive line. Obviously, we're taking that pick very seriously in terms of where it could go, especially when you consider the fact that the entire offensive line is, like you said, a question mark. If you're looking 2 to 3 years down the road, every single offensive lineman that's there right now could be gone. So if they go that route, it won't surprise anybody. But Brad, appreciate you, man.
Rob, thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure. And anytime I could talk some offensive line, you already know I'm down.
Well, I mean, you have, your wings are large enough to talk any prospect. I know that. I know that much. And, you know, if I can get you to come back, maybe I'll get you to come back on here before the draft. We still got 3 weeks, two and a half weeks or whatever it is. So maybe I can get you back on here at least once.
Let's
maybe
do
we'll
it.
Do a mock draft together or something like that. I don't know.
Oh,
those are all the rage.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And they're never right, but it's fun. You know what's super quick mock draft story? In my infancy of doing mock drafts, before our podcast, before getting into the media land of 49ers world, I used to run, I can't remember the name of the website, I used to run mock drafts, and I would start in the 7th round, and I would trade my 2 7th round picks for a 6th round pick. And then I would trade my 2 6th round picks for like a 5th round pick. And then I would trade those 2 5th rounders for 4th rounders. And my mock draft, I'd have like 5 first-round picks and 3 second-round picks, and I'd call it good. And I'm like,
yeah,
look
I
at
like
this.
That. Like, I like that.
I'm like, look at all these players that I'm drafting here. Why is nobody else doing this? They were the most worthless, ridiculous, mind-numbing mock drafts of all time.
That's
but
hilarious.
It was fun. I was drafting Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry every time in this mock draft. It was dumb.
I love that though. I love the dreaming. I've done my mock draft where I've dreamt that the 49ers traded up to 15 so I could take Troy just so I could say I did it. But I'm all for it. That's what mocks are for. You can't take it too seriously.
If for some reason the 49ers end up with that player, I will shed a single tear just for you,
gosh.
Man. Like
I would do victory laps. I don't even know what I would do. It would be
you'd
crazy.
Go streaking, man. You'd be
probably
out the door.
Close
you'd be
off,
out the door before they could finish the
screaming.
Pick.
Screaming. They're like, what is this ginger beard doing? But you know the vibes.
Yep. All right, man. I appreciate you. Like I said, maybe I'll try and bug you for another show before draft day rolls around. You've done too much work not to.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and I'd definitely love to be back on.
All right. So again, everybody make sure that you follow both the SF Niners and Graham_TFS.
SFN.
No. There you go. I botched that up. I closed my notes. Damn
You're
it.
Close.
I closed my notes.
You're close.
It wasn't close enough. We're going to say it again. Okay. At the SF Niners and at Graham_SFN. If you don't know how to spell Graham, then I don't know. You must live under a rock, but it's Graham. Okay. I'm just making sure that everybody
just
gets
think of
there.
Graham cracker. That's it.
Right.
You're good.
Right. Man, I could go for some s'mores right now. All right. So check out Brad and everything he's doing. Put in a ton of work. He's interviewing players. He's in the weeds. He's officially gone from fan account to like he's in the grass along the foundations of the team. So make sure that you show him that love. But in the end, the ultimate love you can show him and us is just being here, listening to the pod, doing your thing. Leave us, leave me some 5-star reviews. Go to his YouTube channel. Watch, like, comment, subscribe, whatever the YouTube algorithm appreciates these days. But again, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the pod, being an integral part of it. But for another episode, I'm Rob. That's Brad. This is Striking Gold. And we're signing out.